What if everything you believed about money was wrong? For thousands of years, humanity has searched for the perfect store of value, something that couldn't be debased by kings, inflated by governments, or confiscated by tyrants. We thought we'd found it in gold, until governments seized it in 1933 and severed its link to currency in 1971. Then, in 2008, as the global financial system collapsed under the weight of its own contradictions, an anonymous programmer quietly released a solution, Bitcoin. Not just another payment system, but the first form of money in human history with absolute, mathematically enforced scarcity. Since its first recorded price, Bitcoin has appreciated over 793,000,000%, outperforming every asset class in existence. Yet its real revolution isn't wealth creation. It's the reintroduction of a concept modern civilization had forgotten: sound money. Throughout history, societies have cycled through the same monetary tragedy. A commodity becomes valuable as money, which incentivizes people to produce more of it, which destroys its value as money. This easy money trap has claimed countless victims. The massive rye stones of Yap Island maintained value for centuries until Captain O'Keefe arrived in 1871 with modern tools that made producing new stones trivial. African agribeads collapsed when Europeans mass-produced them. Even seashells, once precious enough to facilitate trade across continents, became worthless when supply chains made them abundant. The pattern reveals money's most crucial property, its stock-to-flow ratio, existing supply divided by new annual production. The higher this ratio, the harder the money, and the better it preserves value across time. Think of it like a bathtub. If the tub is full, high existing stock, and the faucet drips slowly, low new production, the water level stays stable. But if the faucet gushes, high new production relative to existing stock, the tub overflows and devalues everything in it. This simple insight explains why certain forms of money succeeded while others failed, and why gold dominated for 5 millennia while countless alternatives disappeared into history's footnotes. Gold didn't become money because governments declared it or economists recommended it. Gold became money because physics made it inevitable. Unlike every other element, gold possesses two unique properties. It's virtually indestructible, resistant to corrosion, heat, and time itself, and it cannot be synthesized from other materials. You can't make gold from lead, no matter how advanced your technology. These physical constraints create gold's unmatched stock-to-flow ratio. Humanity has accumulated gold for thousands of years, yet annual new production consistently hovers around 1.5 to 2% of total existing supply. This scarcity has profound consequences. When gold's price doubles, miners can't flood the market with new supply to crash prices, unlike silver, copper, or any consumable commodity. The Hunt brothers learned this painfully in the 1980s when they tried to monetize silver. As prices rose, producers simply mined more, ultimately bankrupting the brothers' scheme. Gold's low supply elasticity makes it uniquely suited as a store of value, protecting holders' purchasing power across centuries. A Roman soldier's salary in 301 AD, converted through gold to modern dollars, could buy roughly the same amount of beef, beer, and wine as today. A 1,700-year price stability no fiat currency has ever approached. History confirms gold's monetary supremacy through stark contrasts. When Rome debased its currency under Emperor Nero, reducing precious metal content while maintaining face value, it triggered inflation, price controls, economic stagnation, and further debasement, a self-reinforcing doom loop that paralleled Rome's decline. Conversely, when Constantine committed to the gold solidus in 312 AD, maintaining 4.5 grams without debasement, he created the bezant, history's longest-serving sound currency, powering Byzantine prosperity for over 1,100 years. The Renaissance itself began with Florence's 1252 minting of the florin, Europe's first major sound coinage in centuries, transforming Florence into Europe's commercial center and unleashing the cultural flowering we still celebrate today. World War I didn't just redraw political boundaries, it shattered the monetary order that had enabled a century of unprecedented peace and prosperity. Under a gold standard, governments couldn't simply print money to finance wars. They had to convince citizens to sacrifice through taxation or bonds, creating a natural break on military adventurism. But when European powers suspended gold convertibility in August 1914, they unleashed something darker, the ability to finance slaughter through inflation rather than taxation. The war's unprecedented length and devastation stemmed directly from this monetary revolution. What should have ended in months, as soldiers demonstrated during the Christmas 1914 truce, when opposing troops socialized and played football together, stretched into 4 years of mechanized horror. Governments could now fund the carnage indefinitely by printing money, transferring wealth silently from citizens to war machines. The soldiers didn't want to fight. The monetary system made it possible anyway. After the war, the international gold standard lay in ruins, replaced by what economist Friedrich Hayek called monetary nationalism. Money became politically controlled rather than market determined. The Bretton Woods system attempted to centrally plan what gold had achieved naturally, making the US dollar the global reserve currency convertible to gold at $35 per ounce. Most countries transferred their gold to America in exchange for dollars, giving the U.S. Federal Reserve effective control as the world's central bank. This arrangement granted America an extraordinary privilege, deficit without tears, the ability to purchase anything globally by inflating the currency everyone used. The U.S. government exploited this power enthusiastically, financing its expanding military-industrial complex and welfare programs by printing dollars. By 1971, when foreign nations demanded their gold back and reserves ran dangerously low, Nixon simply ended dollar convertibility, completing the transformation to pure fiat money. Since then, government-issued currencies have become humanity's exclusive monetary system, with predictable results. 57 hyperinflations since World War I, compared to just one in all previous recorded history. Money doesn't just store value, it shapes how we think about time itself. Time preference, the ratio at which you value present versus future consumption, determines whether you eat the seed corn or plant it. Sound money lowers time preference by reliably preserving value, enabling the patient accumulation of capital that builds civilizations. Unsound money raises time preference, encouraging immediate consumption because tomorrow's money will be worth less than today's. The Stanford Marshmallow Experiment revealed time preference's profound importance.